Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. Hello. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert. On location today, it is Veterans Day, so naturally we are at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum in the heart of Camp Shelby. Rhino, safe and sound, back at Super Talk headquarters. We'll be guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. On this Veterans Day, so we've got to start out by expressing our gratitude, our thanks to all those who wore the uniform, veterans of the United States Armed Forces. We do not enjoy the freedoms, the bounty, the opportunity, the prosperity, the safety that we enjoy in this country without their service. And so we are incredibly grateful for them. And of course, we love coming down here to the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum. It's such a fantastic place here at Camp Shelby. And if you've not been here, you gotta tour it, man. It is absolutely incredible. So, Mr. Trump, Rhino, has wasted no time in getting to work there, even though he is the president-elect. He, of course, named his chief of staff. He's also named Elise Stefanik, the representative from New York, whom I thought would make a fantastic vice presidential running mate. But it looks like she's going to be serving the United States as the ambassador, to the United Nations. I think it's an excellent pick. Of course, that does open up a House seat, but I think that's a fairly safe district. And then also, Mr. Trump, the president-elect, he's also named, isn't a cabinet pick, really hasn't said a whole lot with respect to cabinet picks at this point, but he has announced that Tom Homan, former director of immigration enforcement under the Trump administration, who honestly is the most plain-talking person I know in this country when it comes to immigration, he's going to serve as the, quote, border czar. Now, I wonder if that's not just a little bit of in-your-face to use that term, the border czar, because Kamala Harris was regularly referred to, although it was a bit farcical, as the border czar, because that's what Joe Biden said he wanted her to do, was handle the border. But she did not. In fact, did she ever visit the border other than sort of that sanitized visit, I think, in Arizona for like 10 minutes? I mean, she really never did go to the where the action is, so to speak. But Mr. Trump, the president-elect, former ICE director, stalwart on border control, Tom Homan, will be joining the administration in charge of the nation's borders. Something else we've also heard is that the president-elect intends to once again withdraw this country from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, which honestly constrains economic activity. This would be a good thing. So we got Trump in office. He gets us out of this thing after Obama put us in it. And now we got Biden, who immediately reversed that. And now we've got the president-elect saying he's going to ditch it again. Good deal. So, also, over the weekend, what a big victory for the Ole Miss Rebels. I was present. That was a whole lot of fun. Don't think I've ever seen the atmosphere at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium quite like that. Also, don't think I've ever seen a defense quite that physical and speedy in all my years of watching Ole Miss football. The goalposts, of course, no surprise, ended up at the City Hall on the square. That's a $250,000 fine that will be paid directly to the opponent, the University of Georgia. I think there will be plenty of alumni who will show up and contribute to that cause if necessary. But that was quite the event, quite the game, a lot of fun. We'll see what happens from there. On the C Spire text line, Louie from the 662, my dad is brother, and all five of my mom's brothers, one of whom perished at sea, served in World War II. We appreciate their service for sure, Louie. Let's see here. Yeah, I saw this, Randy. That's that is a commonly distributed, widely distributed meme. I get it. We can't read it over the air. Rhino, if you could dig it up, do you have the NBC breaking news chyron for us? I've got some breaking news that I think would sort of fit the music. There we go. Breaking news, everyone. Costco was forced to recall nearly 80,000 pounds of butter because the label failed to mention that the kitchen staple of butter contains milk. Is that an eye roll or what? That butter contains milk. And they're forcing... My gosh. They sent out an initial recall for 79,200 pounds of Kirkland Signature butter because they say it's an undeclared allergen. So this is both the salted and the unsalted version of Kirkland Signature Sweet Cream Butter. They failed to list cream as an ingredient, do not include the allergy warning that butter contains milk. What's happened to our elementary schools? Do they not teach that? That milk is used to make butter? What am I missing here? Surely folks know this. Unbelievable. So,
well, I mean, you remember that infamous man on the street or survey or whatever it was where they ask a whole bunch of people where chocolate milk came from, and a staggering number of people said brown cows, right?
Oh my gosh. While we are celebrating, recognizing, and extending our gratitude to this country's veterans, military veterans, up there at Columbia University, that's sort of ground zero for the anti-Semitism protest that we've witnessed over the last year. Columbia University, one of the august institutions of higher learning, they are planning a protest of Veterans Day. Organizers say they want to reclaim from the Israel-U.S. war machine in the name of Palestinians killed in Gaza. Move your butt over there, then. You do not deserve the freedoms that our veterans have preserved, have safeguarded. You don't deserve it. And it's only because of them, do you think these fools get this? It's only because of them that you can organize and participate and hold such stupid protests. Man, Veterans Day is a holiday to honor patriotism, love of this country, sacrifice of our veterans. It's incredible. They say they reject this holiday and refuse to celebrate it. That statement was imprinted on a flyer for this group of agitators. They're not even agitators. I would describe them as losers. They say the American war machine should not be honored for the horrors unleashed on others. This country is not offensive in nature in the use of its military assets. It is defensive. It's idiots that go out and launch strikes and terror against innocent civilians. That's what drags America has historically into the wars where we have prevailed and preserved, honestly, the world. The world blows up without America's military. That's not being warmongering. It's just being common sense. The purpose of the American military machine, in my view, is to deter such attacks and wars. It's preparing for something you hope you don't ever need to use. Folks, we're stepping aside for a break right now. Once again, we're at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum. Coming up next is the director of the museum, Tommy Lofton. Stay with us.
Wrong.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Days live from the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum in the heart of Camp Shelby, just south of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We want to also recognize our sponsors for today's remote broadcast, the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, Heritage Firearms, Wyatt Bowers, Allstate. So we're pleased to welcome now the director of the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, Tommy Lofton. Tommy, always good to see you, sir.
Great to see you. Glad to have y'all here today.
And I like our setup here in the lobby, the backdrop, incredible, isn't it?
I dig it. Yeah, that giant photograph behind you, that's actually taken from World War II, a few hundred yards away from here, where the WAC training camp, the Female Women's Army Corps training camp area was located. So a great historic photograph taken right here in Mississippi that, to use a modern term, went viral during World War II.
So. That's awesome. That's incredible.
We're quite proud to have that and a number of other images in this lobby.
Well, here in the state of Mississippi, we are a patriotic sort, and we respect our nation's military, and we honor the veterans who serve, and that's what this day is all about.
For sure. You know, it's such a blessing to be here in Mississippi, and like you say, a state that's rich in patriotism. And, you know, at the end of the day, even if we don't all get along politically, we tend to try to find middle ground and middle ground with each other, no matter what maybe the national media and other folks like to say about Mississippians. I still think we have one of the greatest states in the United States when it comes to service, when it comes to patriotism and love for our fellow man. Again, we don't always get along, but thankfully we have military individuals in military uniform today and veterans who have served to preserve the right for us to disagree with each other politically or agree with each other. You know, folks who've secured the right for us to be able to go and have fair and secure elections, like the process we just went through, and you know, we're really blessed to be here in this state and in this country more than we realize, and I'm afraid we take it for granted, but it's important that we take days like today to honor and remember our veterans.
And in particular, this museum, it showcases, it features, and it preserves the memory of all the Mississippians who served this country in uniform, and it is so fantastically curated. I'm just always amazed every time I come down there. And folks need to come see it and understand Mississippi's rich history, as you say, and role in the United States military. I think they would be surprised to find just how many really of these superstars wore the uniform.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's a huge honor for us to be able to have the duty or the task given to us by the state of Mississippi as the state's official military museum to be able to honor and commemorate our veterans and those Mississippians also who've fallen on the battlefields or in service to our state and to our country. And as you go through these exhibits here, we take a lot of pride in a lot of these individuals that you see in here, and we hope that folks leave here with a new appreciation of our state, of our military service, and the hand that Mississippians have played in warfare since the foundation of this country, even before we were a state, frankly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be proud of, and if you don't really have a huge veteran connection or a recent one, we encourage people to come in here and find a new one. You know, there's a lot of heroes in here. If you need one, come find one, because there's a lot of great Mississippians in here that whose stories need to continue to be told and remembered, and if we don't talk about them or we don't display them, sadly they'll just get lost.
Yeah, and that's what's so great is that we're retaining all this history, we're preserving it for current and future generations who should be aware and recognize again Mississippi's role. Talk to the folks about how you come across so many of the artifacts that are stored in the museum. I think I've been here doing remotes in the past where literally that day you received some artifacts from a family who say, we found this when we were cleaning our attic up or something, and it's better preserved and better retained in your care.
Sure, yeah. We get quite a few folks who come in, and we encourage people to try to make an appointment ahead of time just so that we can make sure we're here or we're not meeting with other people at the same moment. But, we do have quite a few things people who brought things into the front door, cleaning out their house, especially since COVID, I think folks realizing how fragile life is and how quickly things can happen unexpectedly. And folks have started to realize, I've stored this under my bed or in my closet for 50 years or whatever, and I'm second or third generation in my family to have it. It needs to be out, and thankfully we're able to take those things, preserve them. We can't display everything all at once, but we try to rotate items through so that folks, every time they come here, will see something a little bit differently, and we look forward to coming to work every day to do things to honor our veterans and honor those Mississippians who've worn the uniform.
You get lots of folks from young folks from our schools.
We do.
That make tours of the museum. Their teachers, their administrators schedule that, come down, take them through. I mean, it's important for young people to understand that history and be exposed to it.
Definitely. And what's nice about it is, again, we're a free museum. We're open Tuesday through Saturday from 9 to 4. It is a great place to come visit, to embrace your patriotism or renew it. And teachers, we encourage to come through here with school groups, because there's other things they can also do at Camp Shelby while they're here. We have a great environmental program. We have archaeology programs. We have a mates program here with basically mechanical work and things going on with tanks that students can learn about. It's a great location to kind of do multiple things at one time for a field trip. We've even had students come up from the Delta, from up in the Delta, to come down here, charter a bus. I think some have even stayed overnight, drawn housing here on post. The students and chaperones stay here. They spend time for a day or two here at Shelby, and then they go back to school and have a whole new understanding of our state's military and military history and everything else.
Well, you could get an entire semester of history lessons in one day touring this museum, because, as you indicated, goes back to before we were even established as a state.
That's right. Yeah, we actually have quite a bit in here from War of 1812 through modern conflicts, and artifacts from all service branches. While we're funded through the Mississippi Military Department, the Mississippi National Guard, when we were chartered, covered all service branch. We cover all time periods of military service as well, and civil conflicts and other things too. So we have quite a unique collection of artifacts in here from air, land, and sea, and from all different corners of Mississippi, from Tunica to Tupelo and all the way down to the coast. So it's not just a Hattiesburg, and it's not just a Camp Shelby museum.
Yeah. I've always got to point out my favorite exhibit, and that's the Huey from that got unbelievable use, was a workhorse during the Vietnam conflict. It is so incredibly realistic, featuring like a Huey and an LZ.
Right.
And soldiers getting on and off of that Huey. It was used a lot, of course, to harvest the wounded and get them away from the fronts and back where they can get medical care. Incredible.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it's days like today that are unique where you see, you know, Vietnam veterans especially who are getting up there in age coming into that exhibit, and you can see it takes them back to that time period of their service, and you see them with their family members. And I've stood there before and heard veterans open up for the first time right there in our exhibits with their family members. And used to see that a lot with World War II and other wars, but sadly, you know, most of our veterans from that era are gone now. And it's nice to see, you know, Vietnam veterans again opening up. Obviously, they had a very different war and a very different homecoming. But yeah, that's probably one of our most impactful exhibits for anybody going through, and that in our World War One trench as well.
Tommy Lofton, director of the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, is our guest. Tommy, have any of them said, yeah, that's exactly what it was like?
Yeah, we've had quite a few who've felt uncomfortable, frankly, saying it's so realistic. You know, we do have a lot of unique uniforms in here and a lot of military weaponry as well. So I'm not going to put a disclaimer on the door, by the way. You know, we have weapons and other things on display in here. You know, if you're upset by military equipment or military firearms and historic displays like that, then... you know, there's other places.
It's curated to reflect reality.
For sure, for sure.
And and that's what it does. And, of course, men and women from the state of Mississippi served in our nation's uniform.
That's exactly right. And we should continue to take a lot of pride in our state and in our service men and women from our state for all they do now, and those who've come before and worn the uniform and in service to the state of Mississippi.
Yeah, well, it's incredibly well done. Anything on the boards that's in development you can share with us at this point?
We're working on a few new exhibits and some changes in some old exhibits, and still working towards a project to look at relocating the museum.
All right.
Building,
we talked about that before.
Larger location. We're getting closer and closer to that, and so more good things to come, and a whole lot more history to share in the future.
Well, it's expertly curated. It is indeed an incredible asset for the state of Mississippi. And folks, if you haven't been here, you really need to make your way to Camp Shelby and tour the Armed Forces Museum, the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum. And it's free, no charge, right? And tell us the hours again, Tommy.
Tuesday through Saturday from 9 to 4.
Appreciate you coming on, Tommy. Always enjoy the discussion.
Glad to have you all here.
Folks, we're stepping aside for a break. Once again, it's Veterans Day. Thanks to all of our nation's veterans. We're at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum in the heart of Camp Shelby. Stay with us.
From the scene.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. Middays is live from the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. We thank you so much for joining us today. And most importantly, we thank America's veterans. Thank you for your service. Thank you for keeping us safe, secure, and free, and allowing us to pursue opportunity and experience the American dream, which not only is the death of the American dream a gross exaggeration, it is alive and well, and I believe about to get a whole lot better, because I am feeling good about the next administration, the Senate shifting to Republican control, and the House looks like Rhino is going to end up in Republican control, or should I say remain under the control of the Republicans, with a slim margin. Again, I think it'll be 5 to 7 seats, just looking at the latest outcomes. Still, what, 15 or so seats outstanding, maybe even a few more than that. But it looks good, and I'm excited about that, and excited about some of the action and some of the pronouncements we're already seeing from the president-elect, who understands it's necessary to get the government the hell out of the way. And I think understands, more importantly, that the deep state of ideological bureaucrats running these agencies that affect our lives, I believe, I've said this before on the program, more than the Congress does. All these dumb executive orders that Biden issued, carried out by, implemented by these agencies, have been detrimental to America. And I think we're about to see a sweeping reversal of many of those. Mr. Trump went out and recorded a video that many of you have probably seen, and he talks about what he's going to do to eliminate this collusion, honestly, between the bureaucrats and the agencies and the American media complex, mainly the left-wing media, engaged in censorship and, again, colluding in information that the government wants the press to publish and permeate? No, that's not how it's supposed to work. That's why we have the First Amendment, honestly, is to separate the press from the government. But when you got the press, as has been the case in this country, the left-wing media essentially being the water carrier for the Democrat Party, we don't have objectivity in press the way we should. We don't have accountability because they're dictating is the government to the press and to social media until Elon Musk became the new sheriff in town taking over Twitter. And that harms the nation, harms us all. So I think we're going to see that change rather significantly. The president-elect in that video said that anyone involved in that sort of censorship and collusion is going to be identified and terminated. And that's the way it should be. You guys probably saw the report about this rogue FEMA employee that was bypassing homes in an area affected by the hurricane, I think it was in Florida, if I'm not mistaken, that had Trump signs in the yards. So rather than discharging their function and doing their job in accordance with their responsibility, which is to provide comfort and aid and assistance to those affected by these disasters, they got selective based on a homeowner's political persuasions. That's just counter to everything about the American system. Governor Ron DeSantis is already calling for the DOJ to get involved. I heard an interview with House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer from the great state of Kentucky saying this morning he expects to have the head of FEMA in the Capitol for a hearing in a few days, is the way he described it, to get to the bottom of this. Now, my understanding is this employee has been terminated, and well, they should be. But there's no place for this. These agencies are not supposed to be politicized, but wow, we've seen a significant politicization of agencies and the heads of these agencies in particular. And if there's one thing that Donald Trump in 2016 exposed when he started talking about draining the swamp, I believe that's specifically what he was talking about, and he did, and I think he will continue to do so. So I like hearing that sort of messaging coming out. I think it was brilliant of him to go out, if you haven't seen it, folks, and record this video where he goes through 10 points of what he intends to do to stop this collusion and to stop this politicization within the agency complex. What I would like to see Elon Musk do, honestly, Rhino, is fire everybody that works in these agencies and make them reapply for their job and justify their value to the agency. Honestly, to America, to the taxpayers who pay their salaries. we would probably end up, as a result of that exercise, with much smaller agencies, which would save us money, and hopefully we'd end up with people who aren't ideological and who are not seeking to advance their political interests as being employees of agencies paid for by taxpayers designed to serve Americans. The agencies themselves need to demonstrate and justify their need and articulate their value proposition, because many of them don't have one. And you guys know there's nothing more permanent than a federal government job. I'd like to see that be the first step he takes. I'm firing everybody. You want to work for the government, you got to go reapply. And we're going to vet every one of you to ensure that you are qualified and that you will act in a way, discharge your job in a way that is not political. Man, oh man. Chris from Oxford says, Gerard, I have not heard Vivek name come up for any cabinet seats yet. I hope he puts him somewhere. He's articulate. He's smart. I agree with you there, Chris. He really hasn't talked a whole lot about cabinet positions at this point. You got Elise Stefanik that he has tapped to be the UN ambassador. I think that's an excellent choice. Tom Homan, also a fantastic choice. Nobody knows the border. Nobody knows how to secure the border more than him, the former ICE director in the first Trump term. He has named him essentially the border czar. I think that is excellent. He's named as chief of staff. I think, doing some research on her. Susan Biles, excellent choice there. And by the way, if you notice these selections, I don't see any DEI being considered here, because it shouldn't be. It should be the people who are most qualified, who bring the most value to the position. And I believe President-elect Trump is showing that in his selections already. With respect to the cabinet positions, there's just lots of, I guess, rumor at this point and speculation. There are some names being thrown around to be attorney general. That's probably the cabinet position that's gotten the most attention, which include Justice Clarence Thomas. By the way, you've probably seen the Democrats are pushing Justice Sonia Sotomayor to step down so Joe Biden can immediately replace her with someone younger, get somebody that could stay on the court that aligns more with their ideology. But there's lots of talk about the Attorney General. Senator Eric Schmidt, a Missouri Republican, has been one. He's been traveling the campaign quite a bit with Donald Trump as a candidate. He's been mentioned. Also, Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, has been mentioned. Mark Pauletta, an attorney who worked as chief counsel to Vice President Mike Pence, later as general counsel for OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, is another name that is being pushed out. And it is being reported that the president-elect has a team of advisors that are assisting him as he runs through various names to be cabinet positions. And then, of course, it looks like we're going to get a majority leader in the Senate elected as early as Wednesday. The three primary candidates there, Senator John Thune, Senator John Cornyn, and also Senator Rick Scott from the great state of Florida, who seems to be the favorite choice of the conservative wing of the party. And he would be my choice as well. I think he'd be excellent, especially for economic matters. Folks, we're going to step aside for a break right now. We're at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. Come see us. Thank you.
Hi, I'm...
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
We're the mighty watch the light. Turn to us, we are the blue.
Welcome back, everyone. Middays is live from the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. Once again, shout out to our sponsors, the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, Heritage Firearms, Wyatt Bowers Allstate. We appreciate them for making our show possible today. So, you know, last week I was talking after the election on just trying to do a little post-mortem on what happened, and more specifically, what sort of doomed the Democrat Party and what propelled the Republican Party to really such a sweepingly victorious day. And, you know, we were talking Wednesday about the classes being canceled in the name of trying to provide some comfort to the students on these campuses that were just devastated at the prospect of another Donald Trump presidency. So I had a good friend that texted us. I was talking about this Friday as well, and this was Friday. And he said, you know, the classes, were canceled to address the mental health of the professors, not the students. The students could care less. I think that's fairly astute. I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, there's a lot of clutching of pearls and gnashing of teeth among the academic community, which is like 95% far left. They're not just left, they're far left. I mean, they're Marxist. And many of them attempt to indoctrinate and brainwash students with their far left ideology. And I do think there probably is a lot of truth to that. It's they who needed the day or two off more so than the students themselves. And I'll make just an observation here. I've been thinking about this a lot since election day. The Democrats in this country lurched so far to the left and totally focused on and embraced social issues and ignored economic issues, ignored the border. The two primary priority issues to American voters in poll after poll after poll. I mean, going back for a year, and they ignored it and continued to focus on social issues, thinking they could win by promoting the issue of a very generous policy on abortion and that Donald Trump is a Nazi fascist. They really thought they could win on that basis. But I'll go further than that. Something that Rhino and I have talked about numerous times. The first day Joe Biden was elected into office, all of his executive orders, well, he issued a series of executive orders that day, an array of them, all of which had incorporated in them all sorts of social justice requirements and dictates to agencies in all their policy making. Crazy stuff. This all started with the George Floyd incident. I submit it was the George Floyd incident and the Democrat reaction to it. Also, the private sector's reaction to it. And it almost felt like the private sector and the government were in alignment. It's that reaction and all the action taken, I think, that doomed the Democrat Party. I think people said, this is crazy. This is going too far. When outcomes are determined on the basis of a person's physical immutable characteristics as opposed to their qualifications, their skills, their performance, their value creation. I think the average person, I don't care what their party is, says, yeah, that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. Think about, Rhino, the video we played a couple of years ago when someone on the campus of the University of Florida was interviewing students. Hey, do you think we ought to implement and apply DEI in the classroom, in the hiring of instructors and administrators? Oh, yeah, absolutely, we need to do that. Well, what about on the football team? Remember the reaction? Oh, no, we're bad enough already. So it applies when you're hiring teachers and professors and administrators and even issuing grades. but not in playing football, because you may interfere with their fun then. They have fun when they win. I mean, that's just how upside down this stuff was. And all the cancel culture that took hold, statues being toppled, and companies changing their historical legacy, I mean, 100-year branding. Was it the Land O'Lakes butter that eliminated the Indian graphic logo off their boxes? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben. You just go down the list. They just went crazy. Major League moving the All-Star game. I totally believe every bit of that was at play here. I really do. And I think they paid the price for it. But you've also seen, in the last few months in particular, the private sector has really started to drop a lot of that stuff. These DEI, these sprawling, expensive DEI departments. Even many colleges and universities have done it as well. So we're stepping aside for a break right now. It's Fox News and Super Talk News. We're at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum. It's Colonel Mark Prine when we return. Stay with us.
Hour of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher. And now, another hour of the talk that keeps Mississippi talking. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Begin your transition now.
Now on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's hour two of Middays. We're live today at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. That's because it's Veterans Day, and we're pleased to welcome now Colonel Mark Prine. So, Colonel, tell us about Veterans Day and why it's so dang important for us to honor and recognize the service of Americans, veterans who've preserved our freedoms and allow us to enjoy the bounty that we do.
Yeah, it's just an amazing holiday that we get to recognize those people who have served our nation. I mean, from even before we were a nation, through those who are serving now and those who will serve in the future, because it's just so important to protect those freedoms that we've had, and they've done that so many times. And hey, I want to, you know, where our veterans serve our nation, let's also recognize those family members who sacrificed that allow those
Absolutely.
Veterans to serve. I was thinking this morning about 1940. President Roosevelt mobilized the National Guard for a year, and you know, the story was, "Don't worry, dear, I'll be home in a year." And yet, in December of 1941, that year became almost another 5 years worth of service for them.
Incredible, no doubt about it. All right, so the museum, you're the special projects coordinator, and also serve as the president of the museum board. It's just an incredible asset for the state of Mississippi, and everybody that walks through here. I've talked to a lot of people after I've done the show that have heard us, you know, being here, and have come because they heard us on the air discussing the museum. And many of them will write back on the text line, or just individuals that I know personally. They're always, of course, just blown away when they go through here.
It is a phenomenal space. I was in a sister state this past week and went to their Armed Forces Museum, and there's nothing that compares to this.
That's awesome.
So to have this much space and to be looking down the road for the next iteration of what this is going to look like, because we have two massive warehouses full of items that we don't have on display now.
That's incredible.
That we can go forward with this and continue to honor those Mississippians who have served our nation from before we were even a state all the way through our service now.
Is there still possible discussion or discussion about possibly moving the facility and getting it a little closer to 49?
Yes, we're still looking. The state has acreage now that does not actually connect to 49, but it's very close to it. So we're working to acquire some additional property that will give us direct access to 49 into the museum's parking lot. So, and right now we're about 20,000 square feet. And as Tommy Lofton and I talk about often, we're looking at probably the next one somewhere around 200,000 square feet.
Well, I was going to say, if you've got warehouses full of artifacts, you need more space.
We need lots more space, yes, sir. And where we sit now would be a great place to do that, but we are surrounded by historic areas that we can't go out. So we need to go someplace that gets a little bit easier access for folks and also gives a lot more ground to expand.
Makes sense. So, Colonel, you were talking about visiting another state's museum. and how it really doesn't compare to this one. Are we recognized on the national stage for this particular facility?
Yes, we are recognized as one of the top state military history museums in the nation. And as a matter of fact, we have next week the planning committee will be here to bring all of the National Guard historians and curators here over in March, I believe. Okay. And they'll come and visit and use this facility to do their annual meeting, but to also see how we preserve and how we curate and work with our community here.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, of course, we've been here for Memorial Day as well, a more somber military recognition day. And you guys have been honored to have Gold Star families in your presence, where you've actually recognized those families for the service of their family member, and they're, of course, perishing as part of their service.
Yes, and we are always honored to have them. We have the state's first Gold Star monument here on the grounds of the museum, and we constantly are having Gold Star families now reaching out to us. When we first started this, it was Gold Star families from World War II. Now we're moving on up into Gold Star families from Vietnam and even the Global War on Terror that are reaching out and going, hey, here are the artifacts of our loved one, and we would like for you to curate them, make sure that they're maintained over the years and are on display.
That's awesome. And so when we were talking to Tommy, it's always amazing that you've got artifacts and exhibits that date back to before Mississippi was a state.
Yes. Yes.
That's incredible.
It is. We recently acquired one. It's a mortar that would be coming from, it was made in England. We think it came here for the French and Indian Wars. It's got the markings of George II, the father of George III, who we fought in the American Revolution, on there. And we've got that artifact that we would like to be on display, because everybody goes, well, Mississippi wasn't around when the American Revolution went on, but so many of the people who founded Mississippi and set up the state were American Revolution and
that?
War of 1812 veterans.
That's incredible. And then progressing all the way through up until present day, right?
Yes, Global War on Terror. We were picking up some artifacts recently from a Global War on Terror service member who had items that we wanted to curate and bring. And that Global War on Terror is kind of interesting, because so much of it is controlled as far as what veterans were able to bring back. But written documentation and artifacts that they brought back with them are just really quite phenomenal. And we're really beginning to see a lot of those turned into the museum.
Incredible. And, of course, I'm always intrigued with the Vietnam exhibits. And I think mainly because I was a youngster. I was a kid, and it was really the first war that we saw on television.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I can't forget just watching those daily reports. You remember that from we had three news networks, and they got 30 minutes a day, and you'd always get the MIA and the KIA, and often reporters on the field reporting. And that was the first time we ever had that.
Yes, and we're able now to reach out and get permission to use a lot of that, especially when it involves Mississippians. And we're really starting to find a lot of those that are coming back all the way back to World War II.
Wow.
We have recently found some footage of Miss Vera Anderson in the welding competition in 1944 that we're able to get some rights to the show, and we continue to bring that forward. But, you know, like for Korea and Vietnam, and especially the Global War on Terror, there's just massive amounts of footage out there that we're able to go and extract those things that apply to the Mississippians and apply them not just a place to come, a museum to come and read stuff off the wall, but, hey, there's video footage. You know, I remember seeing one recently about the 155's first deployment overseas, and they were flashing it up, and I was going, oh, yeah, I watched that in Kuwait while the 155 was getting ready to come join us there. It's kind of going, that's kind of cool.
That's awesome. And we should also talk about where we are at Camp Shelby here. What a critical asset this has been to America's military efforts for a long time.
A long time, since 1917, and we continue to see just a massive growth in the use of Camp Shelby. Look, we've talked before about we went to Joint National Training Capacity Certification back about 4 years ago, and we continue to see more and more of our joint brethren and sisters come here to train. We just recently had a very large force of Marine Corps, Marine Corps training here. This year we've had our first time with the 53rd Infantry Brigade Combat Team from Florida came here to train. They absolutely loved it. They want to come back. And we continue to see just, well, this year we'll probably set a record, because it's always been, we'd have 363 out of 365 days somebody training here. Well, this year with leap year will be 364 or 365 out of 366.
Wow.
So somebody here on the ground, always training, always some kind of event going on.
And through the years, a lot of members of the military have been on this facility, been on this installation, that have never been to Mississippi until they were deployed here.
Yeah, was in a wedding in South Dakota a couple of years ago, and somebody said, "Where are you from, Mississippi?" He said, "Oh yeah, I've been to Camp Shelby." I'm like, going, "Oh, where did you mobilize? Where did you deploy to?" So yeah,
it's incredible.
Yes,
and the other thing that I learned that a couple of years ago doing the show down here that just it really shocked me was how it at one time the base extended all the way to just north of the coast, I believe.
Yes,
right?
About down to where the Tradition Campus is
okay.
Now. We understand that early on the thought that Keesler Army Airfield would be the Army Airfield that serviced Camp Shelby.
Yeah.
So all the way down as far as just above Keesler. Yeah.
And it was a training base, right?
Yes, it was a training base that was founded in World War II, named for a Mississippian who was killed in World War I.
Wow. Well, I know, talking about the Vietnam War, lots of pilots trained right there at Keesler, right?
Yes, yes, a lot of training at Keesler. We also had, during the various wars, have had various other training installations. During World War II, there were 21 military training installations in Mississippi.
Wow, I had no idea.
Scattered all over the state, yes.
So just further evidence that the state of Mississippi has been a key participant in the military of this country.
Yes. Been a key participant really since they founded Camp Shelby in 1917, and we continue to have people pass through here. They're preparing to go overseas and getting ready for what the next piece of combat looks like. I mean, one of the things that General Ginn talked about at Retiree Day this past week is as we're beginning to develop a cyber network training area here at Camp Shelby.
So, keeping up with the times.
Keeping up with the times, indeed, yes.
That's unbelievable. Well, the facility is world-class. It's magnificent. You, Tommy, and everybody else does such a fantastic job of maintaining and operating it. Everybody needs to come see it. Tell our audience again the hours.
We're open Tuesday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and we have you come through the south gate of Camp Shelby, so you can be vetted to come on post, and it's real easy. You just show your driver's license and come on in. And we're open also on the patriotic holidays, so Independence Day, Memorial Day, and today on Veterans Day.
Fantastic. Retired Colonel Mark Prine has been our guest here on Middays. We're at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. We're coming right back.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. Middays is live from the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. Thanks so much for joining us today. It is Veterans Day, so I was just talking, Rhino, to the colonel on the break who was talking about the USO here, having served some 50,000 people over the last year, members of the armed forces. That's just incredible. What a valuable asset that is. That is just goes to show you just how needed such services are for the members of our armed forces. So on the C Spire text line, the question about what happens to the Republican majority in the Senate and the House if some of these seats are vacated because the president-elect calls members up in the House, in the Senate, to serve in the administration in some capacity. You know, I think that the president-elect and his advisors are keen on those districts that might be at risk in a special election or in a situation where there could be an appointment. J.D. Vance is one. He's a senator, of course, sitting senator from Ohio. It will transition to being the vice president after inauguration in January. I'm not sure what the law in Ohio says, Rhino, but I suspect, consistent with most states' laws, the governor would appoint someone to replace J.D. Vance, and then there would ultimately be an election. it could be a special election, or it could be, as it is in the state of Mississippi, when a statewide seat such as the U.S. Senate is vacated, the election, the governor appoints, and then the election for that seat would be officially held at the next election where there is statewide races. There are statewide races. And that's, I think, as much in the interest of economics as anything. A special election across the state for just one seat is expensive to hold. And so by putting it off, essentially, and delaying it, I should say, until the next statewide election, there's no additional cost in having that particular race on the ballot. So it's been certainly discussed and rumored, if you will, that Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith is among prospective candidates to serve as the Secretary of Agriculture under a new Trump administration. And that situation would occur. She would vacate her present U.S. Senate seat, and then the governor would appoint a U.S. senator. And then the election scheduled for her re-election in 2026 would be when the folks would go to the ballot or the polls and cast a ballot and elect a new U.S. senator for that seat. Should that happen? Now, we don't know anything about if that's more than just a rumor, if that's going to occur, that the president-elect would call on Senator Hyde-Smith to be the ag secretary or not. We don't know that. It's just been rumored. There's lots of rumors out there, by the way, on this kind of stuff. Not expected. But as we were discussing earlier, the possibility of Senator Schmidt in Missouri being selected by President-elect Trump to serve as attorney general. Yeah, that could vacate that seat. I think Missouri would be in good hands to replace with a Republican. Ohio, I'm not as sure. What might happen there in seating someone to replace J.D. Vance? It would not be smart, I don't think, politically for the Democrat Party, because you got Governor DeWine in the state of Ohio. I don't see him, honestly, appointing a Democrat, if that's the way it works, to replace J.D. Vance. He's the 70th governor of Ohio. And let's see, he is a Republican. And so, you would expect that he would appoint, if he's the one that has the say there. I think that's the way it works in Ohio.
Yeah, I finally found the breakdown. It's five states only allow for the replacement of senators through special election. Okay. That's Kentucky, North Dakota, Oregon, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin. The other 45 states authorize their governors to fill the Senate vacancy by appointment until a successor is elected. 34 of those 45 states have provisions based on the timing of the replacement that would allow it to go to the next general election. But all 45 of those have provisions, except for maybe New Jersey. There's some wonkiness, but basically they all have different timetables as to when a special election could be called, or if it has to be called, or they can wait till the next general election. But that is the case for all but five states. And again, those five states that require a special election are Kentucky, North Dakota, Oregon, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin.
Okay. So, in the case of Ohio, the governor would appoint, and then the election would be held at the next, I assume, statewide election, just like it is in Mississippi.
Correct.
And I'm not sure when that would be in Ohio, when, say, for example, the statewide, state-level elections would occur. Let's see, I'm trying to think back. How long has Vance been in? Since 22. Right, Rhino, I think, is when he got elected to the U.S. Senate. So he would be up in 28 is when his official term would end. But I'm not too worried. At least Stefanik's district, who, as we mentioned earlier, Looks like she's going to be President-elect Trump's pick to serve as U.N. ambassador. She's in a safe Republican district. I don't think that would cause any problems, but I'm sure they're thinking through all that. Honestly, I am. On the C Spire text line, concerned that Toon or Cornyn will be elected majority leader. They are not a fan of Trump, nor are they MAGA. It's Toon, Cornyn, and Rick Scott. The president, to my knowledge, is yet to the president-elect to endorse any of those candidates. I think it's true that Rick Scott is more closely aligned with the president-elect than are Senators John Toon and John Cornyn. I think that's fair to say. And there are some concerns about that. I've seen that as well. He seems to be, he's from South Dakota, by the way, John Toon, John Cornyn, of course, from the state of Texas. He seems to be a little bit more liberal on a lot of matters, including the border. I do think Rick Scott would be a better choice. I do think he is more closely aligned and has a better working relationship with the president-elect. There is some background on Toon in particular where he said some rather critical things about the president-elect in the past, and of course all that is surfacing now, much of that on video. So we shall see. You guys have probably seen these rather viral posts showing where the senators stand. It's apparently there was a poll conducted. I'm not sure if I'm prepared to believe that it's authentic or not, but a poll of all the Republican senators and where they stand on their pick for majority leader in the new Senate. I believe it shows that both of our senators, Rhino, in this particular poll, lean towards Cornyn, right, is what I've seen reported. But the thing that's weird about this deal is that I think it shows that Toon supports Cornyn. And that's why I'm a little skeptical as to whether or not this thing is authentic. I did hear Senator Kennedy from neighboring Louisiana this morning being interviewed about that. This was actually on the Business Channel. He said, don't believe it, that the poll is inauthentic, for what that's worth. He stopped short of endorsing any particular candidate, but he did caution the public to really take that poll with a grain of salt. I'm not really sure what to think at this point. Really not. Bobby from Monticello says Hyde Smith initially obtained her Senate seat by appointment. So did Roger Wicker, Bobby. But they both then had to run for the office at the next statewide election following their appointment. The poll on X was almost 100% for Scott, says Paul in Meridian. David McComb says Ted Cruz should be Senate leader. Never happened, though. I don't think so either, David. I don't think he commands the same level of respect and has the same positive working relationship with the senators, which is critically important, as does Rick Scott. Folks, we're at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. It's Veterans Day. Thank a veteran. We're coming right back.
From the scene
today, Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. Middays is live at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. It is Veterans Day, and we certainly do thank all the veterans for their service to this great country. We certainly do appreciate it. And you're starting to see, Rhino, more and more of these people that are melting down over the election. It's just incredible. And I got to say again that I respect Scott Jennings over at CNN. He told a panel of left-wing loons over at CNN, and he's a Democrat. He's a liberal. He told them, this is what happened. And they refused to accept it, accept reality. He said it was about the border. It was about the economy. It's about this lurch to the radical far left on social issues. That's what got us beat here. So, respect to him. He told the truth. But there's some other folks, oh my gosh, that are just absolutely melting down and calling for violence. Calling for violence. Aren't we the ones that are always criticized for violence and just being inhumane and all that sort of stuff? But you've seen this. There are teachers that are just have been unhinged in the classrooms with young children over the election, which is insane.
It's because they're not used to getting their way or not getting their way.
I think you're right about that. It's entitlementitis. There are people who are calling for their family members. I saw one where this unhinged lady says, I hope you choke and die on your turkey at Thanksgiving because you supported Trump. And then there's one that I think I sent to you. It's a woke mom. This was the day after the election. She holds back the tears as she tells her terrified kids who won the election. It's just incredible. This is why you lost. You've got Professor Eddie S. Glaud on MSNBC. I mean, he just becomes unhinged, apoplectic. He says he just can't accept that Trump won because of issues like the economy. He said it's because everyone is a racist. There's this sense that whiteness is under threat. I know we shared this with you the other day. And even left-wing journalist Stephanie Ruhle said, no, you got it wrong. They're tired of stuff being so expensive. I mean, it's just simple as that. But unfortunately, well, I guess I could say fortunately. I think it's fortunate for those of us who want to see the country prosper and want to see an end of all this left-wing social lunacy, want to see our borders closed. And you keep saying that, folks. You keep believing that it was all about racism and misogyny and just take that to the bank. And take some sort of comfort in that. Because that's what you want. You want us all to be racist and misogynist. It's how you make a living. You're shakedown artists. You're race and misogyny pimps is what you are. That's how you earn your living. You can't function without it. You don't get the message. That's not what people said. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with complete mismanagement of the country's affairs. It cost us all. People are tired of having this nonsense pushed on them. It's incredible. One of them said, oh, it's because they're tired of seeing black and brown people in Cheerios commercials. Well, I actually think there is a little truth to that. When commercials are tilted like 99% featuring minorities, and I don't have any problem with that. And they're private companies. They can do whatever the heck they want. But just understand that you paid a price for that. It's Bud Light getting the goofy transgender person to go promote Bud Light. It's drag queens dressed as nuns. I don't remember the name of the group. They don't need to be mentioned. It had a whole night at Dodger Stadium for that. Yeah, that's exactly right. You're right. People are sick of it. It's not because of being racist or transphobe or any of that stuff. It's just you've made a priority out of it. You've made that the front and center issue. And you're forcing us to accept that, and you want us to provide deference to it. And you want to reward it. And anybody that doesn't live that sort of lifestyle, you could be the victim in hiring, in promotion, in compensation, in appointments, and in your application being approved to enroll in a college. Fortunately, the Supreme Court said you can't do that anymore, universities. Yeah, all that was at play. No doubt about it. But you guys keep thinking that is the reason that people voted as they did, that they're racist, that they're bigoted, that they're misogynist. Keep thinking that. Keep promoting that. Keep ignoring the truth and reality. You're going to get your butt beat more, guarantee you. Because the average person just doesn't care about all that, but they're tired of being dismissed and abandoned and minimized. You have given, again, deference to, priority to, the teeny tiny sliver of the population. And the vast majority of the population just says, well, what about us? Guarantee you. And it's law enforcement. By the way, you guys probably know that left-wing loon DA in Los Angeles, Gascon, he is out. He got defeated in liberal Los Angeles. Even Angelino said, no, this is crazy. This guy prioritizes and, again, provides preferential treatment to criminals and doesn't give squat about victims of those crimes. Thank God common sense prevailed, and the people of Los Angeles said, you're gone. I saw an interview with his replacement. Rhino, he's sharp. He's tough. He's going to do the right thing. And he said as much. They said, how come you think you won? He said, people are tired, once again, of a DA who seems to be more about granting preferential treatment and pandering to criminals. He was more about working the statistics, was he not? I want to show that we're no longer going to have these statistics that reflect that certain types of people are committing most of the crime, even though they actually are. So we're going to manipulate that by just ignoring the law and letting these people run scot-free. And he did that. But the good people of Los Angeles said, enough, you're gone. And it's just heartbreaking to think about the families who were affected, lost loved ones, because of the way he conducted his affairs as a district attorney. He wasn't about upholding the law or dispensing justice. No, he was about working statistics to show that, look, white people now are more involved in committing more of the crime. Yeah, because you let the others go. And then it's Proposition 36, Rhino, I think, was the one they just voted on in California.
Cracking down on crime.
Yeah.
70% of the vote went to crack down on crime.
And this was, of course, after they implemented policy that essentially ignored any sort of theft, of burglary, if the dollar value of the goods that were stolen was below $900. Help yourself, below $900. Stores shutting down all over the place, people afraid to go in. The clerks, the associates that worked in these stores were told, stand down, just get out of the way, let them have whatever they want. People in California said, that is enough. That's just awesome. By the way, we got a text from Gary in the Berg. Says, great Veterans Day show. Thanks for honoring those that have sacrificed so much that we live free in the greatest nation on earth. Super Talk is a mighty force for good in Mississippi, and can't imagine where we would be without your voice. Keep up the good work. Really appreciate that, Gary. But we appreciate you guys for tuning in, for listening, and I hope we're able to inform you a little bit, make your day a little better, and that we can all work for the common cause of freedom and safety and security and prosperity and the good old American dream and the American way. Let's see. Bobby from Monticello says Hyde Smith initially obtained her Senate seat. Yeah, we got that. I'm sorry. Thanks about that. Have you heard about the secret meeting in the Pentagon about how to not allow Trump to nuke anyone on the ceasefire text line? Can't say I've heard of that one. So they're going to lock up criminals rather than locking up deodorant, says Thomas in Greenwood. We're coming right back with Tommy Lofton at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. Again, a shout out to our sponsors for today. That would be the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, Heritage Firearms.
I think you got the wrong one.
Oh. Well, I thought something sounded kind of wrong, so I put the wrong headset on. That's what happens when we have three at the table here, and there's only two of us, so I apologize for that. We're back at the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum. Shout out to our sponsors, Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, Heritage Firearms, Wyatt Bowers Allstate. Also, just wanted to pass on something real quick that Stephen Miller was just named by President-elect Trump as a deputy policy advisor, and J.D. Vance confirmed that. So we're back with Tommy Lofton, director of the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum, now that I got the right headset on and folks can hear me. So, all right, Tommy, so Veterans Day, can't think of a more fitting day to tour the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum.
Yeah, we're excited to be open today. We're usually closed on Mondays, but since it's Veterans Day, we felt like we should be open. So we encourage folks to go out, if they haven't already, into their communities, go to the Veterans Day parades, different functions, and then if you're looking for something to do this afternoon, come into the museum. We'll be here till 4 o'clock today, so we hope folks will take some time to come through here, learn about some of our heroes from the state of Mississippi in service from 1812 to today.
It's like I said, it's a one day history lesson that equates to like several years, perhaps, in a typical history lesson or history classroom. It's incredible. You learn so much, but more importantly, you find out about how Mississippians participated in the United States military.
Sure, you know, it's quite a huge level of patriotism, I would say, going back to even before we were a state into military service, and especially, you know, even in World War One, the state itself was actually split on whether we should be involved in World War One or not. But we still had a number of individuals who signed up and went.
I didn't know that
the draft.
We were split.
We were, yeah. We had two of our leaders there, you know, had opposing opinions on whether or not we should get into World War One, but the state itself showed a tremendous level of patriotism in such a way that we put large numbers into the draft system and into service, and that's, you know, true of more than one race as well.
Yeah.
Even though we were segregated military at the time,
yeah.
And of course that tradition has continued, I would say, from World War One to today. Mississippian, you know, men and women from this state are doing everything they can and volunteering to serve our state and our nation, and we should honor those folks. That's why we set aside a day like today to honor the men and women who have worn the uniform, regardless of service branch, worn a uniform or many uniforms to serve and protect our freedoms.
No doubt. Anything new since we were last here, Memorial Day? Any new exhibits you can tell us about?
We're making some changes to our Civil War exhibits, our World War II Homefront exhibits. We're still working actively on those. And then we actually have been restoring a German Nebelwerfer, which is a mouthful to say, but it's it's a German rocket launcher. And if you're familiar with maybe the term screaming Mimes was one of the terms we used to hear from World War II veterans that served in Europe. These were basically a rocket launcher that were just terrible. terrorize you along the front lines. It sounded horrible. They could also shoot smoke, not just high explosive rounds, but could put smoke downrange in the battlefield to mask German maneuvers and things. And we see in history and other things, those were used from North Africa and the Normandy invasion, but a lot of the people I remember interviewing years ago talked about seeing them in the opening stages of the Battle of the Bulge in December of 44. Okay. That the Germans launched just tons of smoke out there, and you know, we didn't. It was a surprise attack for us as Americans. We didn't know they were coming, and the sound and sight of this weapon is something. So,
wow.
We have one. It was heavily painted, so we stripped it down to try to see what else we could find, because you couldn't see any of the maker's marks and other things on there. Now we were able to figure out what factory it was made in, what year it was made, and when we actually got down to some of the lower levels, if you will, of the paint, we found the original German paint scheme as well. So we've saved some of that, which we'll have on display and have it marked out. You know, this is the original German paint, and then we're replicating some of it that we weren't able to save around that same section.
Wow.
That's original. So
really cool.
Kind of a unique piece. You don't see those in a lot of museums in the United States and
something.
Or in the world, frankly. So we have that, and we've got some other artifacts from the Civil War we're getting ready to put out that are unique and even tied to Vicksburg and the fighting there. So we're excited.
Well, again, a rich history has Mississippi in America's military, and it is showcased here at this museum, the Mississippi Armed Forces Museum at Camp Shelby. Tommy, always good to see you. Thanks for coming on. Just great effort here, and appreciate all you guys do to keep this history alive.
Oh, we're glad to do it, honored to do it. And we hope folks will come see us this afternoon. Again, we're open till 4. Our normal hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 9 to 4, and we are 100% free. But we do have a gift shop and do take donations at the door.
That's awesome. Folks, we're out of here today. Back with you again tomorrow. Dave Hughes will be filling in. I'm back on Wednesday. Until then, thank a veteran, stay safe, and God bless.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.